From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Outspoken and bold, refusing to remain silent, he is a voice for social justice and an advocate for our common humanity. My guest today is a scholar and person of faith who believes in blending theory and practice. Joining me on the journey is the Dean of the Howard University School of Divinity and Professor of Religion and Culture, the Reverend Dr. Alton B. Pollard III. Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
So you attended Fisk University, where you received a BA with honors in religion, philosophy, business management.
Yes, yes.
Interesting combination. Tell me a little bit about your time at Fisk.
Business management was one of my majors because, like many young people, your parents want to make sure that you do something practical. And so, so I was a business major, but I also was deeply enamored with, and my passion really was about religion and philosophy. So I triple majored and had a great experience there.
Now, what about your upbringing, you think, led to that interest in religion and philosophy?
Well, I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota. And in Minnesota, there were not many people of African descent in my time. And I grew up, my parents moved to an all-white community when I was 8 years old. And it was a horrific experience. I'll just leave it at that. But there was a saving grace in my life, and it was our church. And on Sunday morning, I felt a sense of sanctuary and peace. And there was an acceptance there that was sometimes difficult to find at other times of the week.
Now, that obviously was on Sunday. I would assume that Monday to Friday you spent time in a school that probably didn't reflect that same type of sanctuary. What was that like?
Well, I was very active in almost everything related to leadership at the school, student government. You know, I played on most of the major sports except football. I was a thespian and all those good things. So I was really actively engaged, but you could count almost on two hands the number of African-American students at our school. So it was pretty difficult. But I always excelled in everything. So on the one hand, there was great difficulty. On the other, there's the exceptional person that's attributed to you.
Right. Now, from a career point of view, you've certainly had academic appointments at a variety of institutions, including Wake Forest, Emory, to name a couple. During those experiences, can you identify probably a moment where you felt that leadership of a school of divinity was on the career path, and why?
Well, it's interesting, sir. When I was teaching at Wake Forest University, theological education was not on my radar, even though I had a degree from a theological institution. I was totally committed to a university form of education. So I was teaching in not only the religion department, but also sociology, history, ethnic studies, urban studies, women's studies. I had courses in so many different areas of the university that I was very much at home. And then I received a call from my former professor, who was also the advisor of my PhD dissertation, and he told me that it was time for me to change. And so I ended up in theological education.
Okay. Yes. No, and you did your PhD at Duke after receiving your master's at Harvard.
Yes.
Now, higher education is under attack for many quarters today. People discuss the value of a higher education, the cost of it. Now you have on campuses, there's concern about overt racism. On campuses, you have several of the predominantly white institutions having more and more uprisings of that nature. And then when you look in our general society, there clearly is a lot of friction, whether it's around police brutality, young Black males losing their lives in very horrific circumstances. Where do you see the church, religion, spirituality, playing a role in a solution to any of these social ills?
One of the I think, pivotal things for us to remember as a society is that this is a nation that was founded on religious freedom. And that means that no particular religious tradition is supposed to have preeminence over any other. Unfortunately, that's being often forgotten today. So I think what we are doing with respect to preparing women and men for leadership in the church is to educate our parishioners and the community at large that the church is not called to be an exclusive country club, but is called to be an inclusive body of believers that invites people of all backgrounds and persuasions and circumstances into the fellowship of believers.
Now, on a higher education campus, as always, where do you see a School of Divinity positioning itself in from an integrating point of view in terms of what we're teaching the young men and women?
Well, for me, this is the most important part of what we do. And it is, I think, what my professor, former professor, saw in me, that here's an opportunity at a major research institution like ours to make sure that theological education is a liaison between our sense of facts and values, between our sense of purpose and perspective, to ensure that what we do really has a grounding, has a foundation, and that we are not simply being educated for the task that is currently at hand, but understanding that there's always a longer view to human existence.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is the Reverend Dr. Alton Pollard III, who is the Dean of the Howard University School of Divinity. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. To switch gears a bit, tell me a little bit about your past research. You've been interested in a wide variety of things, but of interest to me includes your looking at the Black experience and how it has been embedded into church in particular. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, for me, of course, being a child of the 60s, which I very much am, I am a child in the United States of a culture that produced rhythm and blues, soul music, gospel, jazz, and I have an improvisational responsibility to all of that. So for me, there's a sense of the fluid nature of what it means to be a human being first, but a person with a particular social location secondly. In our society, race and ethnicity, among other social qualifiers, have often been used to discredit and disqualify people. For me, the importance of religion and the importance of my faith has been to constantly remind myself, but also every person that I meet, that we are a part of a larger collectivity that would call us into celebration and affirmation of what it means to be human.
So tell me about from civil rights to hip hop or meditation.
That is an essay that grew out of a lot of conversations with young people, beginning with my own children. My son, who is very much a hip-hop head, my daughter, who is also a Howard alum. And in these conversations, as well as with their friends and as with the students that I taught, I became increasingly aware of just how valuable the contributions were to be made from the perspective of young people. And it reminded me that in the 60s and 50s, it was young people. Now, Congressman John Lewis as a shining example, the 26-year-old Martin Luther King as another, and we could go on and on. But it was young people who led us into a place of freedom, and it is young people who I think are now struggling to do the same today. Only they speak with the voice of hip-hop.
Right. That's absolutely right. I think I can relate to a couple of those. Hmm. Now, as you have mentioned before, you looking at the social identification of who we are based on the color of our skin or background can often be the focus. One of the things that you've written about it is the Black family.
Yes.
And how we look at a woman's role and the man's role. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we live in a society where for many of us, the stereotypical image of the family is a nuclear one, with the husband at the head of the household, the wife, and then the children, two children, a dog, and a picket fence, you know, the stereotypical sociological view of what a family is. What we have forgotten sometimes, as particularly as people who are African descended, is that we came from a background that was even had an even deeper sense of what family means. The language "it takes a village" was not something that was newly, found in recent years, but goes back centuries and centuries. The recognition that an entire community raises a family, that there are elders and that there are children who are all accountable to each other. This became a part of what we came to understand as the Black church in the United States of America. And so not only the Black church, but the Black community, Black higher education, colleges and universities were all practicing this same recognition that the elders were responsible to the children. The children had an accountability to the elders. Their accountability is to make sure that they learn and learn well for the next generation. And the responsibility of the elders to make sure that they teach the children not only how to use their minds, but also how to use their hearts.
Right. You know, as you mentioned, Black higher education in that paradigm, and you look back at Benjamin Mays and kind of the footprint he left, what is your perspective of that era, his legacy, and what we must do as institutions to not just preserve that, but to see it thrive?
Benjamin Mays was an amazing man, and I consider it to be a great honor to serve as dean of Howard University School of Divinity, precisely because he was a predecessor. I've met him on many occasions. I heard him. He came and preached at my home church when I was growing up. I went to his funeral when he died in Atlanta, and I will always remember the words that were shared at his funeral. I also knew the close relationship he and Daddy King had, because they were always talking about the passing of one another. And indeed, when they died, the batons were passed to the next generation. But Benjamin Mays had such a profound respect for the life of the mind and the life of the spirit. The two were joined at the hip, and he never saw a need to separate them in his research, in his scholarship, or in his advocacy for community life.
And with that in mind, the contemporary university and the contemporary theological education have to find some type of an intersect.
Yes.
What is your vision of the Howard University School of Divinity in that contemporary context?
We are embedded not only in a great university, but we are embedded in the heart of the nation's capital. We are literally in the shadow of the nation's capital. And so as theologically educated persons, it is our responsibility to make sure that we are also engaged in public policy matters. And so a number of our faculty serve on all kinds of, you know, not only committees and projects related to federal, local, state governments, but also are active at the grassroots level. It is no longer enough today to carry as a minister the Bible and the newspaper, but that you must also be savvy about what's going on in the public square, as well as on the internet and beyond. So we're making sure that our students are not only interested in preaching from the pulpit, but having a public witness that will transform people's lives, irrespective of their own particular faith walks.
Well, thanks for being here. My guest today has been the Dean of Howard University School of Divinity, the Reverend Dr. Alton Paulo III. And I must say that church is not just for Sundays, but the real vibrancy of the church is probably what occurs from Monday to Saturday.
Amen.
I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR World on HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, glasshouseradio.com, HUR Voices Sirius XM 141, HBCU Sirius XM 142, and 96.3 WHUR Washington.